feet above ground level from south of Corpus Christi to Sargent, Texas. And that can be certainly a life-threatening situation.
Michael Brennan of the National Weather Service tracking Hurricane Harvey, giving us the latest update on the potentially deadly storm.
We've seen Harvey strengthen over the last couple of days. It's now right on the cusp of major hurricane intensity. So we have this very intense area of winds here near the eye wall that's going to be moving onshore in the middle Texas coast during the late night hours tonight and early tomorrow morning.
President Trump speaking with both the governors of Louisiana and Texas as they prepare for the arrival of Hurricane Harvey. Trump reportedly told Texas Governor Greg Abbott all available resources of the federal government are at his disposal. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards tweeted that Trump had offered his full support as well. Get more news online at usaradio.com.
Sometimes what you want most from your car is nothing. No headaches, no surprises, no anxiety when it's late at night and you're on some distant freeway in a thunderstorm. That bit of nothing is everything. And that's what you get when you purchase a certified pre-owned Mercedes-Benz from your authorized dealer. Because only an authorized Mercedes-Benz dealership has the skilled technicians to certify that your pre-owned vehicle is up to Mercedes-Benz standards. Only Mercedes-Benz can back their certified pre-owned vehicles with an unlimited mileage warranty for up to 5 years, with roadside assistance included. It's time to experience confidence that's as unlimited as the warranty. Visit the certified pre-owned sales event now through August 31st, and you'll receive 2 years of prepaid maintenance and special financing available through Mercedes-Benz Financial Services, only at your authorized Mercedes-Benz dealer. You've waited long enough.
See your authorized Mercedes-Benz dealer for complete details and limitations on certified pre-owned warranties.
Hurricane Harvey going to have a major impact on the American economy in the short term. Here's Sharon Reed.
Hurricane Harvey is impacting a critical economic region of the United States.
That area where that storm is hitting makes up about 3.5% of the entire GDP of the U.S., and it's going to grind to a halt.
IBM's business weather analyst Paul Walsh says with so many people forced from their homes and businesses, and with the likelihood of widespread damage along the Gulf Coast, the economic hit from Harvey could be significant. Shipping channels could be shut down for days, and some analysts say look for higher gas prices now that Harvey's shut down oil rigs and refineries.
Vegas gearing up for a much-anticipated fight, the mega fight between UFC star Conor McGregor and undefeated boxing champion Floyd Mayweather takes place in Vegas tomorrow night. Before they face off in the ring, the two meeting up on the scales today for their weigh-in, the MGM Sportsbook says Mayweather is considered the heavy favorite. USA Radio News.
Everyone loves liberty, so why are you letting other people tell you what's best for your health care? Exercise your freedom with Liberty Health Share. Liberty Health Share is a community of people who voluntarily share one another's medical costs. Members are able to take back the freedom to make their own decisions about their health care. Stop letting others tell you what to do. Call us at 855-58-LIBERTY for more information or check us out online at libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
A major economic advisor sounding off against President Trump. Here's correspondent Chris Barnes.
In a statement to the Financial Times, economic advisor Gary Cohn called on the Trump administration to, quote, do better in condemning neo-Nazis and white supremacists. Cohn, a Jewish American, telling the Times, quote, I will not allow neo-Nazis ranting, Jews will not replace us, to cause this Jew to leave his job, end quote. Cohn faced pressure from Jewish activists and former colleagues on Wall Street to leave the administration after the president's initial response to the violent events. I'm Chris Barnes.
The Hollywood Walk of Fame paying tribute today to late comedian Jay Thomas.
Flowers will be placed on Thomas's Walk of Fame star along Hollywood Boulevard this morning. The actor, best known for his co-starring or recurring roles on Mork and Mindy, Cheers, and Murphy Brown, died yesterday at the age of 69 after a long battle with cancer. He received his Walk of Fame star in 1989 in the radio category for his work as a disc jockey early in his career.
A London woman who made over a dozen false rape accusations, including on one man who served 7 years in jail, has been sentenced to 10 years in prison for her deceptions. The sentence handed down Thursday to 25-year-old Gemma Beal by Judge Nicholas Lorraine Smith, who called Beal a very, very convincing liar. The judge berated Beal for the damage she's done to actual rape victims, saying the media attention on all of her false allegations will harm the cases of women who have actually been raped. Lawyers for Beal say they will appeal the ruling. USA Radio News.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Hello, my name is Robert Burns. My website is bobburnspeaks.com, and I'm inviting you to listen to my show at 1 o'clock on Friday afternoons on Hutterton Chamber Radio, entitled Awaken to Your Purpose. How many people walk through life awake and knowing why they were incarnated here in this beautiful planet? Not a lot of people do. I was in my late 40s by the time I found out, but now I know. So listen to the show, and maybe that'll promote you to awaken to your purpose. And thank you so much.
Well, good afternoon. It's another Friday, and hopefully the weather will hold. And let me tell you, however, that at least the prediction, and we never can really predict anything, it seems, but this looks like a perfect weekend. Tonight's going to be partly cloudy. In fact, there's some really black clouds up over Round Valley and near Clinton, so hopefully they won't be rained out tonight. But certainly tomorrow we're expecting sunny weather, high of about 77 degrees, low Saturday night, which really low, about 52 degrees, great sleeping weather, however, and won't have to use the air conditioning. And by Sunday, we should have a sunny day with a high of about 78 degrees. Again, mostly clear on Sunday night with a low of 54. Mostly sunny on Monday. So again, this is the weekend to do something outside. And I'm going to tell you about something if you're not aware. If you don't know anything about Howell Living History Farm, it's really one of those fantastic gems. It is actually in Mercer County, just south of Lambertville, right off of Route 29. But why am I talking about it today? Well, tomorrow is potato harvest, and there are volunteers, and anyone can volunteer. It's tomorrow, Saturday, August 26th, approximately 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and what happens, it's really something so much fun to take kids or grandkids. And, you know, if you're a grandparent, you can sit and kind of clean off the potatoes. You don't have to go out in the fields and pick them up. But the way that the planting is done in April by volunteers, and the farm itself, if you've never been there, is really a fantastic place. Everything is done with horse-drawn implements, so the furrows tomorrow, the horses will go through and dig up the furrows of potatoes. So when we say digging potatoes, it's really not. You walk along the furrows and you pick them up in a bucket, and then you take the bucket back to some other volunteers who are kind of getting the dirt off. And what happens is the potatoes are given to the local food pantries, and if I was better, I'd remember how much or how many pounds of potatoes that they are able to collect and give to the food pantries. And, of course, too bad we can't buy them because they're organic potatoes. And it's just a fun day, especially if you have children, grandchildren. I'm always amazed about the how the children will go in. And, you know, most of them think that potatoes, you know, if they see potatoes, they see them in the grocery store. And so this is a real experience for them, and they have so much fun. So in any event, If you have any questions, you can certainly call. I'm not sure they'll still be open today, but maybe. And otherwise, call tomorrow, 609-737-3299. And the other thing the kids and the adults get to do is see how potato chips are made in the old-fashioned way. And, in fact, what they do is they have the kids bring one of the potatoes that they've picked up, and they bring it up to where they're cooking the potato chips. And so they can see their own potato being made into potato chips. So anyway, you know, there's so much going on in Hunterdon County, but this is one of the things that it's not quite in Hunterdon County, but they welcome us, and there will be a lot of, hopefully there will be a lot of volunteers. In fact, this is a, not a rain date, but it was initially scheduled last Saturday, and it had to be postponed for a week because they had to be sure that the fields would be dry enough so that the potatoes would not be caked with mud. In any event, that's what's happening tomorrow. And what's happening today is it's the law. And so I'm going to talk about some of the things that have been going on in the legal world in the last week. One of the things that I've noticed recently is there seem to be a lot of cases decided with respect to foreclosures. And I'm not sure if that's because so many of these foreclosures have been lingering or if, in fact, the foreclosure rate is still as high. Now, of course, some of these cases, if they're going up on appeal, they have been in the system for a long time. And what I'd like to talk to you about, even though it's not a published case, meaning that it could not be cited as precedent, but this shows how people who hope to keep their house can be foreclosed. And the title of it is Bank of America N.A. versus O.O.H. And it was a case decided by the Appellate Division on August 22nd. So what happened is the O's, O.H., O's executed, meaning signed, a promissory note and a mortgage that secured their real estate, their real property, in favor of an entity that's not really a party in this litigation. It was American Partners Bank. And then that note and mortgage, they were subsequently assigned to Bank of America. And this is really routine. I think most people, when we're paying our mortgage to a certain bank, we really think that that bank or other institution holds the mortgage. That really is not the case. In so many times, the mortgages are assigned or transferred or sold to another bank. So in this case, it was Bank of America who was the plaintiff. So what happened is following a default in the payments, the respondent, Bank of America, filed a complaint to foreclose. Now, that's why they're the plaintiff in this case. They filed the complaint against the O's because they were due their mortgage and it was in default. So in that point, they answered, meaning the defendants, who are now filing the appeal, answered and asserted various counterclaims for violation of the Consumer Fraud Act. And however, on motion, the trial court, meaning before there was a final trial, the trial court granted a dismissal of their counterclaim and this was important, and a final judgment of foreclosure was entered. So that then what happened is they filed an appeal and they argued that the assignment to the respondent Bank of America, that assignment was invalid and that because it was invalid, it prevented the Bank of America from being authorized to foreclose. So that the court affirmed, meaning the trial court affirmed foreclosure, holding that the assignment to Bank of America was proper and that further it was documented by the endorsement of the note. So then the question was, further testimony also indicated that I'm going to go back and forth and tell you by name, because otherwise we go back and we're talking about appellants, respondents, plaintiffs, defendants. But in this case, the testimony indicated that the Bank of America had been in possession of the note since shortly after the note originated, since shortly after the loan originated. In other words, what that means is American Partners Bank assigned that mortgage to Bank of America shortly after they gave out the loan. So the court said that based on the review of the record, the court was satisfied that Bank of America was the holder of the note and therefore established that the assignment to Bank of America was valid and that the Bank of America had standing to foreclose. So that is an important proof, obviously. So additionally, however, the O's failed to support their affirmative defenses and counterclaims by credible evidence in the record. So that's why the trial court had dismissed their affirmative defenses and counterclaims, because the court said there was no credible evidence. So the appellate division agreed that there was no credible evidence in the record. And so as a result, the trial judge did not commit error in striking the defenses and the counterclaims. And then finally, the appellate court noted that the witnesses that appeared on behalf of Bank of America properly testified under the business record exception to the hearsay rule. And I have talked about the hearsay rule before. There are some exceptions to it. But basically, one person can't go into court and testify that somebody else told them something. The somebody else has to come in and testify. So, however, there is a business records exception where, in this case, obviously what happened is someone on behalf of Bank of America testified about the business risk exception. I'm sorry, they testified about the business records, and that was proper under the business record exception to the hearsay rule. So, bottom line, the appellate division affirmed the entry of the final judgment to foreclose. Now, there's probably no question that the parties have been in the property for a length of time. This case, at least this blurb, and I haven't read the entire case, doesn't indicate whether or not the bank started to refuse payments. It doesn't indicate whether or not the O's paid their taxes and the homeowner's insurance on the property. And actually, if you read the whole case, it would tell you how long it's been going on. However, that is just one of a number of foreclosure cases recently that have come about. Now, there's a case that, of course, interested me, and I'll talk to you about it as soon as I play one, maybe two, short spots.
Join the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce and the Flemington Community Partnership for their Card Club networking event hosted by Northfield Bank on Thursday, September 28th from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at Northfield Bank's Flemington office right here on Main Street. For details and to RSVP, visit hunterdon-chamber.org or call 908-782-7115. See you there.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, Para Planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms. When they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Pat and Heidi and Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Pat and Heidi and Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
This is Chamber President Chris Phelan inviting you to the 29th Annual Business and Home Expo with our restaurant showcase. This wonderful event will happen on Thursday, November 9th at our new location, Next Level Arena on Case Boulevard in Flemington from 2 to 7 p.m. If you're a business or organization and would like to participate, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or visit our website at huntertonchamber.org.
Well, we're back with It's the Law, and I'd like to talk a bit about a contract dispute, and it was Adams versus Allstate Life Insurance, and it was a case in the federal court, District of New Jersey, and it was before Wolfson, not our Bill Wolfson, who's not a federal judge or magistrate, but it is, in fact, a federal case. And in this case, the reason it's you'll see why it's interesting to me. By the way, if I didn't announce who I am, I'm Pat Smits. I'm an attorney here in Huntington County. I limit my practice to family law matters, the divorce, the custody, premarital agreements, cohabitation agreements, and things related to family issues. However, even though this is a contractual dispute, I'm interested because guess what? In this case, the plaintiff, Adams, filed a breach of contract suit alleging that Allstate Life Insurance fraudulently disbursed funds from her annuity account to her former husband. Now, that's pretty significant. So apparently, upon request, Allstate Life Insurance Company transferred $70,000 from the annuity account to a checking account jointly held by the plaintiff and her former husband. And she alleged that she had no knowledge of the account's existence and that her signature was forged. So this is very significant. And the Allstate Life Insurance moved to dismiss three of the six counts in her complaint, alleging that she failed to state a cause of action to which relief could be granted. So specifically, Allstate Life Insurance argued that the plaintiff had not alleged that it acted in bad faith and that her allegations were insufficiently pled. In other words, whoever filed the complaint, they're saying, Allstate is saying, that they didn't do it right. So the court in this case, the trial court, dismissed the breach of good faith, holding that the plaintiff did not adequately plead an essential element because she failed to state that the Allstate Life Insurance Company acted with the intention of preventing her from receiving her expected benefits. So she had expected benefits under the contract, and according to Allstate, she did not state that they acted with the intention of preventing her from receiving her expected contractual benefits. So I'm going to take a second or a minute to remind everyone that is why it is important to retain an attorney who knows how to proceed in the type of action that needs to be proceeded. For example, different proceedings in criminal, different proceedings in family. I would not file a case in civil. I would refer it out because I would be concerned that I might not fail to state an essential element in the civil case. And, of course, I've seen lots of things in family law, usually not In a family case, it's usually not that the pleadings are wrong, because the pleadings in family are very general. So it can be other things. But anyway, in this case, in any event, in this case, the trial court also dismissed the breach of warranty because the plaintiff improperly relied upon a statutory defense as a basis for alleging defendant's purported liability rather than a legal basis for such liability. Again, very important, because apparently there was no statute that could be pled as in that she couldn't rely on a statute, but rather there had to be the legal basis. And finally, the court dismissed the claim for negligent hiring, as plaintiff lacked any suggestion that that Allstate knew or should have known that any employee had some quality that could be foreseeable. In other words, that an employee would have some quality that could foreseeably lead to plaintiff's alleged injury. And then accordingly, the court granted the defendant's motion to dismiss. Now, that's very harsh. I mean, this woman lost $70,000 because of what her ex-husband did. Now, I will be getting a copy of this case. I don't know if what the outcome is. That fine, the court is saying go back against him if he did something wrong, but you can't go against Allstate Life Insurance Company. In some sense, this is a surprising outcome because it's really based on improper filing of a complaint, improper pleading. And so that may or may not be able to be refiled. And often what happens in cases like that, they can't be refiled because there's a statute of limitations, and that has passed, meaning that the case has to be filed within a certain period of time, or else you lose the right to file the case. But this is, in my view, a very significant case, because somehow this lady is losing $70,000, and she said it's based on fraud. Now, whether or not a prosecutor would do anything as far as criminal action, we don't know. But we do know that the federal court did not let her proceed. So that is so often the case that people don't understand. They may have rights, but they have to handle the situation properly. And one of the real concerns is statute of frauds and how long you have to file such an action. I do know this. President Trump's rhetoric and actions continue to test the American Bar Association as it pursues its core goals, which include upholding the rule of law and also to enhance diversity and eliminate bias. So there's been a lot of work and a lot of effort to go into doing exactly that. And there's concern that there will be an undoing of it. And concern of the institution, the American Bar Association, is pretty conservative, and they're concerned, as are others. Now, there are some questions, and actually there is apparently a closing of the gender pay gap, and anyone who's followed anything in the last number of years knows that the pay disparity between the genders have been a fact of life in the United States labor force for decades. And then while there is ample debate as to the causes of it, causes of this inequity, you know, it's not just one reason, but lawmakers across the country are responding to calls to close the gender pay gap in ways that challenge traditional notions of setting salaries for new hires. So there's certainly more of a concern, and in fact there is some advantage that a woman-owned company has, and I just hope that these are legitimate owners of businesses, because otherwise there will be a backlash against that, and we all know that. There's been a challenge to New Jersey's bail form measures, and a federal judge in Camden heard arguments on an insurance company's bid for a preliminary injunction against implementation of bail reform in New Jersey. Well, you might ask, why would that be? Why would an insurance company care? Well, there are obviously a lot of bail bondsmen who are insured, and they're looking out for, their profit and their bottom line. I don't know if you've heard, but there on Monday of this week, California juries who awarded $417 million in a talcum powder trial may well have been convinced by three new pieces of, influenced by three new pieces of evidence, including an email photo that arrived just as the trial, I don't remember if I have to look and see if it was just as the trial was beginning or ending. No, it was just as the trial was starting, and that was according to the plaintiff's attorneys in the case. Huge verdict, $417 million. So the conservative nonprofit organization, Citizens United, and they, if you recall, they successfully fought for the U.S. Supreme Court for unlimited donations to federal campaigns. And now they want to keep its list of donors secret. So they're, that's one of the big concerns of the people who want to change campaign financing. One of the real leaders in that has been Senator John McCain. So one would say, you would think that Republicans would be for unlimited donations. But he and many others recognize the problems. I mean, we can see even in some small elections that there are huge amounts of money. I mean, millions of dollars being spent. So in any event, now Citizens United, who actually won in the Supreme Court, then now they're trying to keep their names of their donors secret. Interesting. Not going to comment, but interesting. There was an antitrust case that was approved for publication, but, I'm not going to go into it. If anybody's interested in antitrust class actions, it's In Re Lipitor antitrust litigation. And it was a Third Circuit appeals court decision, 106 pages. And so the what they did is they appealed the dismissal of their complaint concerning two drugs, Lipitor and Effexor. And the plaintiffs alleged that the companies were holding the patents to those drugs, fraudulently procured and enforced their patents, and entered into monopolies. And they entered into those settlement agreements with potential manufacturers of generic versions of the drugs. And the plaintiffs in that case alleged that defendants should be required to reverse payment settlement agreements that the court subjected to antitrust scrutiny in one of the other cases. Now, the district court dismissed their reverse payment settlement agreement claim and found that their allegations were not plausible. And then the district court further held that the plaintiffs failed to plead plausible allegations. And so that it goes on, that the court did not require a specific valuation pleading demanded by the district court, and held the burden was on the defendants to justify large reverse payment settlements. So for Effexor, the court found that the generic manufacturer received hundreds of millions of dollars in value in exchange for delaying introduction of generic Effexor. So which procurement and enforcement of Lipitor, finally, the court held that the plaintiffs plausibly pled fraudulent procurement and enforcement of Lipitor patents by alleging that the defendants submitted false or misleading data to obtain the patent. So these are huge cases. I mean, just huge. So there was a case where the plaintiffs appealed the district court dismissal of a malpractice complaint against their former bankruptcy attorney. So I guess we better make sure that Bill reads this case. In any event, what they did is they alleged that the defendant attorney committed two incidents of malpractice, first by making allegedly insufficient response to a creditor's relief form and the creditor's relief from the automatic bankruptcy stay. So according to them, their attorney's response was insufficient, and although the attorney ultimately had the relief from the stay overturned on reconsideration. So they said, you did it wrong, even though you finally had it overturned. And then they also alleged that the attorney failed to file Chapter 11 monthly operating reports, and that resulted in their case being converted to a Chapter 7 liquidation. So that's very important for people who are filing under Chapter 11, Chapter 13. They're going to have to be making, if there's an agreement reached, they will be making certain payments, and those payments will be used to pay off their debts. And if they can't make the payments, what happens is that the case, if it doesn't start out in a Chapter 7 liquidation, it will, of course, end up as a Chapter 7 liquidation. And what happened here is the plaintiff said, we didn't want a Chapter 7 liquidation, but because of something our attorney did, that's exactly what happened. So a substitute counsel filed a plan for reorganization that included the defendant attorney's fees. And although the plaintiffs objected to the defendant's motion for reorganization that included his fees, the court dismissed their objections, finding that the defendant had an approved fee application, and that his fee application listed the fees adjudicated on behalf of the plaintiffs in this case. So then the plaintiffs filed the present malpractice action, which was dismissed by the district court on res judicata grounds, meaning it's already been decided. And then on appeal, the court affirmed the dismissal of the complaint, agreeing with the defendant and the appellate court. So getting down to everything, the court held that by approving defendant's fee application, the bankruptcy court implicitly found the defendant's services to the plaintiffs were reasonable and accepted. So the court noted that a judicial economy favored litigating the malpractice claims against the bankruptcy estate attorney in the bankruptcy court. So that, and there were lots of stays, overturn decisions, et cetera, in that case. So if anyone has any interest, I would really suggest reading it. It's an 11-page opinion in the Third Circuit, and the case is Weinberg versus Kaplan. So that would be certainly something to follow up on if you have any interest in it. So what I'm going to do is just play a news brief and be back shortly.
USA Radio News with Jason Wirt.
Texans who are in areas that have been declared as evacuation areas. It could be your local official who has declared an emergency evacuation. You need to heed that call.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott among the chorus of voices of officials telling residents to get out of the way of Hurricane Harvey. The storm strengthening now to Category 3 status, making it a major hurricane. This reporter on the beach near Corpus Christi, where the storm is already coming in.
The storm surge here expected to be between 6 and 12 feet tonight. Pretty sure all of this beach will be underwater by midnight when the storm is supposed to make landfall.
The White House saying President Trump has been in close contact with the governors of both Louisiana and Texas. The president is now scheduled to head to Texas to view damage from Hurricane Harvey at some point early next week. You're listening to USA Radio News.
You're part of a growing business. You need to hire, but not just any candidates. You need the right candidates. You need powerful tools to find the right fit for the job, and you need tools that are easy to use. That's where Indeed.com comes in. Indeed's advanced algorithm uses the specific details from your job listing to position your job post where more relevant candidates will find it. The right candidates. Screener questions help you zero in on the best talent, while sort and filter tools keep your recruitment organized. It's no surprise an independent study shows there are 5 times more hires made through Indeed than any other job site, more hires than the rest combined. And right now we're giving new users a $50 credit to post a sponsored job, boosting your listing in relevant search results and helping you find qualified candidates faster. Claim your $50 credit at Indeed.com/credit. That's Indeed.com/credit. Indeed, the world's number one job site. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental. NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Okay, we're back, and glad you're joining me for the last few minutes. Well, what else is happening? As I said, there have not been, in the last few weeks, too many published cases. There was one in family law, and this is an appellate division, 39-page opinion. They're using initials, which they do in family law cases, in published and non-published cases, when they want to protect, especially when they want to protect children. But what this case also shows is that even when parties have agreements, especially agreements with respect to custody of their children, these agreements can be changed. I can't tell you the number of times that I've had a potential client come in to me and say, well, wait a minute, we agreed to this. Well, there can be a change of circumstances, and the courts can change the agreement. So this case, which was approved for publication on August 15th, ESVHA, and as I said, it's an appellate division case, and basically these cases, most of the cases that are published show you what not to do. So in that case, the parties were engaged in lengthy litigation and disputes both before the divorce and after their divorce. In other words, post-matrimonial disputes. In any event, they divorced, and there was a finding that the father sexually abused the party's minor son. And so that there was the sole custody was granted to the mother. And there was also an award of counsel fees against the father. That was challenged in two appeals. And so the father challenged the trial court's findings of sexual abuse and also on preconditions for future applications for parenting time, as well as the trial court's award of attorney's fees to the mother. So the mother appealed the trial court's denial of her reconsideration to reduce the counsel fee award to judgment. So what does this all mean? Well, when in family cases, there can be an award of legal fees that one spouse, and we're using divorce here, one spouse must pay on behalf of the other spouse. So at that point, it's an order, and however, there's another step to reduce that to judgment. So in this case, the father appealed from the award of legal fees, and however, the mother thereafter filed a motion for reconsideration because she wanted a judgment against him, and the trial court denied that. So there are cross appeals here. So not only did she file for denial of her reconsideration to reduce the counsel fee awarded to judgment, and the other thing you need to know, if an award is reduced to judgment, then it will be searchable. For example, if there's a judgment against you and you own real property, that judgment will come up whenever you want to sell that real property. So that's what she wanted, was a judgment. So then she could do other, she could also do other things if she had a judgment. And she also wanted an award of additional fees for making the motion. So the court reversed those provisions of the orders which required the father to comply with certain requirements prior to making any application for parenting time with his son, but otherwise affirmed the prior decision. So the court affirmed the denial of the motion for reconsideration, and the this is the appellate division. The court noted that the father failed to object to admission of certain evidence and that such admissions of prior bad acts was unavailing. However, the court reversed as to requiring the father to admit his wrongdoing prior to application for parenting time as a violation of his Fifth Amendment rights against self-incrimination. And then further, such orders, according to the appellate division, directly threatened the father's parental rights because he may not petition for modification unless and until he waives his privilege against self-incrimination and also admits wrongdoing. And so the appellate division said, as the family court should not reach a conclusion as to the father's ability to parent prior to seeking a modification, the court vacated those provisions requiring preconditions. So that, other than that, the court upheld in every way. So basically what the decision is that you can't have preconditions until, in this case, until the father requested unsupervised parenting time or co-parenting time, etc. The court couldn't take that one further step. So at some point, what this means, of course, is that the mother may have to go back to court many times. Well, there are other things about stress on litigators, but I'm not sure that that's a real interest to a lot of people. There was a grant where the petitioner appealed from a denial of his application for a grant and the demand for reimbursement of another grant. If anybody is interested in that, look to Hossain, Hossain versus the New Jersey Department of Community Affairs. So there was a workers' compensation claimant who appealed, and sometimes this is interesting. I mean, it's a whole separate area of law, but in this was a case against United Parcel Service, and that the claimant appealed from the denial of two of his claims for increased disability. And this is not a published case, but in 2009, he received two separate disability awards for two separate claims that he litigated. In other words, they went to trial. And he received a 40% permanent partial total disability for left shoulder injuries that had required two surgeries. And so that was what he got for that. Now, what does this mean? I mean, this is really workman's comp lingo. And they talk about percentage. They have how much you would get for certain types of injury, whether you're 100% disabled, partially disabled. And in this case, it's a meaning and it's important what they find. And in this case, it was a permanent, partial, total disability. But that was as a result of bilateral carpal tunnel syndrome. So the claimant in this case said that his symptoms and conditions were worse after the 2009 awards. And so he wanted them to be increased, the awards to be increased. And he presented testimony from a general practitioner who had examined him in connection with the prior awards and who found an increase in his disability. In other words, it was worse and it was the level of disability was worse. So what happened is a compensation judge, and these cases are all tried in front of compensation judges, noted that the petitioner, the guy who was asking for an increase, had not sought medical treatment for his alleged increased symptoms. Whenever they say alleged, you're in big trouble. He didn't ask for any accommodation at work. Well, that one I can better understand. Especially men doing certain types of jobs, they really don't want for any accommodation. They're trying to, fit in. They're often worried that there'll be some reason then that they might be fired. So that's pretty common that someone kind of toughs it out, doesn't ask for an accommodation. But in this case, he also accepted the other expert's report, meaning the judge, and found and made an award for a 1% increase in occupationally induced hearing loss. And in this case, then, the petitioner argued that the compensation judge should have accepted his expert's findings as to his increased disability from his shoulder and carpal tunnel injuries. And however, on appeal, the court found that there was more than sufficient proof in the record to sustain the compensation judge's conclusions. And understand that that is common. I mean, the appellate court is going to make every attempt, unless they read something wrong, to uphold a trial judge's decision. Now, I have seen and have been involved in one case fairly recently where I really think that the appellate division didn't understand the law. But in any event, we're kind of at the end of time. I look forward, hope you'll be back and listen next week if you're interested in the law. And as I said, I guess I don't have time to talk about the published family law case, which, of course, maybe we'll talk about it next week because it's certainly, if nothing else, it'll show people that, they really don't want to get into litigation in family matters. Tough not to sometimes, and that's really a shame. But I think in the end, anyone, unless they're really vindictive, would tell you to do everything possible to try to resolve issues, especially if it's financial issues. But in any event, the case I was talking about, the matrimonial case, is ESVHA, and it was a case on August 15th. You can go on the New Jersey judiciary and still find that case. So we'll be back next week, hopefully, and we're off to the news, and then we'll be back with the sports guys. At least I hope it's going to be guys, not just me.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web.